right here is for the people.
Gentlemen, to Renaissance Podcast 38. So Anne and I, we went down to Floatworks in Canary Wharf to try out the isolation tanks. It's something that I went to once before in 2013. You know, actually, Jay and I did a podcast on that. You want to check back one of the older episodes. But it was during a time when I wasn't meditating myself, so my whole understanding and the whole reason why I went to the flotation tank was completely different to my recent experience. We were able to have a nice interview with a lady that was working there. We got to take a couple of pictures, a bit of video footage. And we wanted to take some time on the podcast today to explain a bit of some of the emotions and the highlights of the day. Now that we are experienced, well, I use the term loosely experienced, but I've been meditating now for 4 months. And you've been meditating for now, how long?
About 2 years.
And for those of you that don't know what an isolation tank or a flotation tank or a sensory deprivation tank, as some people call it, you go into a little pod. There's about 10 to 15 inches of water, just enough for you to float. It's filled with about a ton of Epsom salts. The water is heated to your body temperature. The reason being is for you to get the sensation where you don't really know where your skin ends and the water begins. You know, after about 5 to 10 minutes, you lose, you know, you almost lose that sense of self, you know, where your borders and where your outline is. It's completely dark. You don't hear anything. You know, you don't smell anything. So it creates an environment that you've never really experienced ever in your life. You know, some people can compare it to just being in a really quiet room, lying on your bed. But even just the feeling of lying on your bed and having your muscles and your bones press against the mattress and on your pillow creates a very unnatural effect, whereby you floating, it's almost like you're floating in space.
There's zero gravity.
Yeah.
Experience, zero gravity experience.
Now that I've been in meditating for 4 months, I have a very clear idea of what I was going to do once I got into that tank. If you've never done it before, it's quite challenging. And, you know, if you're prone to anxiety and, you know, claustrophobia, and even if you're not, I think just being locked in a chamber just to be alone with your thoughts for an hour could be quite daunting.
Well, that was the first thing that came to me, actually, that the anxiety, and I'm not usually, I don't have claustrophobia or anything like that. I'm normally okay inside lifts, confined spaces. It's not a problem for me. But actually, after a very short period of time, I actually had what I would describe as a mini sort of anxiety attack. And I could feel it coming. I was about to sort of open up the lid, and the darkness combined with sort of the heated air, because it's not a natural sort of air, is it? It's not like you're breathing fresh air. It's not as bad as, let's say, a sauna or a steam room or Vikram yoga.
But it's almost like a sauna.
Yeah. So you've got that sort of...
Yeah. You can feel it, and it feels like you're almost breathing hot air.
You're breathing hot air.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got you can't... It's complete darkness, and you're in water. So, although the water is not noticeable because you're floating and... But it's enough, you know that you're in a confined space. And for the first time ever, actually, not to put people off, because it was actually a pleasant experience in the end, but there was that initial overcoming of this slight stress. I could feel it coming, and then I turned on the light. I was almost tempted to open the lid. But then I decided to just notice, again, just using mindfulness techniques of actually noticing what's actually going on. Am I actually short of, you know, because I think the concern is, am I just going to suffocate? When you realise, actually, I'm not suffocating, because it doesn't take very long. If you hold your breath for 30 seconds, then you are actually suffocating. You are actually deprived of oxygen. And, you know, that unpleasant feeling will come very, very, very soon. If there was a genuine lack of oxygen, there wasn't. It was just the mind running away. And it's not a natural situation for you to not have the distractions of the senses. So you're for the first time alone, truly alone, or as alone as you could be with your own thoughts. And so whether it be, you know, sensations in the body or sight or anything, you know, you're just complete. Initially there was the music, wasn't there?
Yeah.
That went off. I turned off the light, so it was complete with my own thoughts. And it's not something we're used to. It's not a natural, you know, state to be in.
You know that that's what you're going in for,
yeah.
But until you're actually sat in there and you're like, it suddenly hits you, then it opens a whole. You know, I've done meditation before, but never in this. This is new to me.
Mm.
And that newness, throw in, you know, the fact that you can't see anything and it feels hot.
Mm.
The body's panicking.
Yeah.
Or the mind's panicking because it's not comfortable in this situation.
Mm. But once that's overcome, once you overcome that, then it's. I mean, some people, I didn't quite have this, and I did listen to a podcast. I think it was on Vice when they compare it to sort of having like a trip almost.
Like, yeah, psychedelic trip. Yeah.
It wasn't as extreme for me, but I can imagine, and like, possibly because I've done meditation prior to this, but I would imagine that for someone who's never actually sort of paid any attention to their thoughts ever, and for the first time, that's all they have, because in there you have no distractions. You can't reach for your phone, and you notice our tendency to sort of look for something to distract us, whether it's in our physical environment, in our body movement. But we have none of that. We're sort of now for the next hour, you have nothing, mate. You've nowhere to go, nowhere to be, just you.
And yeah. So during the daily life,
how
many times does one stop to look at their phone? You just see it flashing, you just immediately grab it, you look at it, and you know, especially with WhatsApp groups. I don't know if you know, but I'm in quite a few, and it's quite bothersome at times, because a lot of the time the messages aren't for you, but you keep getting flashed and pinged every time. So it's just constantly just checking, just in case, you know, what if.
Yeah.
And that just mirrors the way that our brain is distracted in all other areas.
Yeah. And even if it's not by the mobile phone, just even in a room, you know, the various sources of light coming into your eyes and whatever it is in your physical environment, it's some sort of distraction. Whether you're paying attention to it or not, you are being distracted by things. So you're not alone with your mind. You might just suddenly notice a fly flying around the room, or a shadow, or something that distracts you. And then that then sparks off some sort of thoughts about, you know, the animal kingdom or, you know, insect kingdom. Something will trigger because you've got the stimulus. But when you have no stimulus, apart, you know, as little, and I can't imagine an environment that, any other environment that could cause you to have zero stimulus apart, you know. Well,
they say solitary confinement.
Hmm.
But then if you don't know, I mean, one of the benefits of mindfulness meditation and understanding the concepts is that to be able to handle situations like solitary confinement, where in fact that almost is, you can come out of that enjoying it.
Mm.
You know, there are people that deliberately go on retreats where they do 18 hours a day of meditation.
Silent meditation.
Mm. You know, and that could be very similar. You know, someone with these techniques in solitary confinement could do fine. But if you are not aware of these techniques, and going into the isolation tank, it's not just to go in there and just be silent.
Mm.
Because being silent doesn't necessarily mean your brain is silent.
No.
Yeah, so if you think that meditation is just sitting down and being quiet, that's actually not what it is.
Yeah.
And as I was trying to explain it to a good friend of mine today, you know, he got everything. He's like, well, but how do you meditate?
Mm. I suppose that is a major misconception, isn't it? That you think, okay, meditation is just to empty the mind, quieten, you know, empty the mind. Well, you realize pretty soon that's almost impossible.
Yeah. But just before you realize it's impossible, you assume that you already know how to do it.
Mm.
You know, when someone says, oh, you know, just you clear the mind, you relax the mind, you breathe, and then you just, you know, something negative comes up, you breathe and it goes away, something positive. But actually, once you get into meditation, that's when you begin to understand how little control you have over those states of mind.
How frequent that internal dialogue you have with yourself. You're not schizophrenic or anything, but we all have that tendency without realizing it. But now you're certainly much more aware of that conversation with yourself and that judgment.
Yeah.
At every point in whatever circumstances that come your way, you're always judging something, always got an opinion and giving it a value or a positive or negative judgment, whether it's desirable or not. It's always something, always something going on. But you're just not realizing it. So consciously paying attention to the thought as it arises. But do you think that at the end of it, what we always go back to, what the benefits are? At the end of it, a major benefit is, because I used it as a tool really for going back to the float tank, that they're just thoughts. So the sense of suffocation, the sense of confinement, it's just thoughts. So I felt at that moment that it paid off. Yeah. Because now that was a situation that was, we sort of set up ourselves. It was an artificial situation. You're not normally isolated, right? But I would imagine, and you know, I'm lucky enough that testing has come along in recent times, but I'm not sure, it's inevitable that something will come along and test my nerve, test my composure, test my ability to hold it together. You know, there will always be a test in time. And I think that was one of them, even though it was an artificial one, to test my mind, to say, well, to notice how much we sort of invent stories and a whole sequence of thoughts came along. And I think I was quite glad that I managed to overcome that urge to just get out of there. Actually, it was I could only best describe it as a mini anxiety attack. And for the first time, I realized what an anxiety attack was.
Yeah.
It sounds like, and it's perfectly safe, so I don't want to put people off, because it sounds like, wow, who would pay to have a mini anxiety attack? I mean, it's not, because afterwards, once you've overcome that initial, it was only the first 5 minutes.
I think what the scariest thing about going into an isolation tank, it's a new environment.
Mm.
So you had that, my equivalent of that was I had this, because your ears are actually submerged under the water level, they give you silicone earbuds.
Yeah.
And the one that I plugged into my right ear as I was lying down, yeah, I felt almost like there was like little, it made it look like a little popping sound. So I felt maybe as if like water was infiltrating it.
Yeah.
And in fact, it wasn't. And even after 10 minutes, I felt like, you know, no water was coming in. But that thought bothered me so much that it kind of spoiled that first 10 minutes, where to the point where I wanted to get out, rinse it out, and, you know, plug, because I was worried about the salt getting in.
Yeah. Same thing happened to me, actually, yeah.
And so that thought, and I think it goes to show that for anybody, and I remember my first experience in there, the first 10 minutes will be uncomfortable because it's new and you'll want to get out.
Mm.
And that whether you actually want to get out or not, that thought will definitely come into your mind.
Yeah.
I'm in this thing, I have the freedom to choose whether I leave it or not.
Mm.
And then therefore, within the first 10 minutes, that thought, you know, let me just get out of here, the fight or flight mechanism is constantly ringing in your mind. So using the meditation techniques, so as I was explaining this to my friend earlier on, he's like, I get everything, but how do you meditate then?
Yeah.
And the beauty of the answer is that it's very simple.
Yeah.
And not only is it simple, it's like, you know, what you actually end up, what your goal is actually the same thing as the exercise that you're doing.
Yeah.
To explain that, I think the simplest way I've been told to meditate is you focus on the breath. There's a couple of reasons for that. One of them, as Eckhart Tolle says, is to allow your brain to be present in the present moment, not having anxiety attacks about the future or getting stressed or depressed about events that have happened in the past. But the minute that you focus on your breath, that cuts away and you're in the present moment. Mm. Also, the breath is a continual pattern that, you know, you're breathing in and you're breathing out. Mm. Now, as you breathe in and out, you find a point where it's the strongest for you. Mm. And for me, it's at the top of the breath. Mm. Once I breathe in fully, once it gets to that top point, I think, yep, that bit is very clear for me.
Yeah.
So as I breathe in and out, when I breathe in, I come to that point, I acknowledge it. And you can even count them.
Yeah.
I like to count in series of 10. So I breathe in. Once I get to the maximum and the full intake of the breath, I count number one. Yeah. And then I breathe out. Sounds very simple, but that's the exercise. Yeah. Now, the challenge is that as you're doing this exercise, your brain is going to think a million different thoughts. Yeah.
It won't stay on the exercise very long.
No.
In fact, you breathe without realizing it as well.
Yeah.
So how often do we actually notice our breathing? Right? We just breathe. It's just a natural thing that occurs.
Right. And as we're breathing, we're living in this, and it's almost like a daydream.
Yeah.
So as you're listening to this now, take 30 seconds and just focus on your breath. As you breathe in or as you're breathing out, what point do you recognize as the strongest and you think, yeah, you feel most comfortable with? But only think of the breath. Now, the minute another thought comes in to your mind, like, for example, you know, this exercise is a waste of time. Or, you know, what is he even talking about? This is stupid. Or, you know, what am I going to have for dinner tonight? Or I've got to pick up the kids later on, or I've got to do this. But what this exercise is going to try and show, what this exercise will show, is that as you're trying to concentrate on one task, these other thoughts are going to come in and they're going to try and disturb you and throw you off. So we'll guide you through a 30-second exercise to demonstrate this. So just sit down comfortably and relax. Find a quiet space. I want you to focus on your breath, just as I described. And the minute that a thought comes in, regardless of what it is, acknowledge it, realize it is a thought, and then take a deep breath. The act of you realizing that it is a thought and you reacting to it by taking a breath, that's where all the good stuff comes in, and that's what we want you to focus on. Okay, so let's begin now. Breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in and breathe out. Where you find the breath the strongest and the most comfortable, focus on that and repeat this for the next 30 seconds. So in doing that exercise, what normally happens is that very quickly the mind is distracted. And then instead of focusing on your breath, you're thinking on a million different other things. And if that's the case, then good. You know, it just demonstrates what we're talking about, that the brain is always wandering. Yeah. Thoughts are always coming in.
Well, and it drift, which it probably did. One of the things I spoke to a friend about mindfulness meditation, and he said, a good friend of mine, he said, well, I can't meditate because my mind is always wandering. You know, I'm everywhere, he said to me. I think that that's a common experience that we have to say it's actually not unique to anyone. I think it's just normal. It's what minds do. They wander. We have to make that point very clear. There's no such thing as someone who, you know, I don't think that person exists, or certainly I haven't heard of anyone that can actually genuinely has a mind that doesn't wander. You know.
But it's important to know that having thoughts and letting the mind wander is part of human nature.
It's just who you are, and we're not trying to block them. We're not trying to. Exactly, it's just being humans. That's what minds do. And
but what we want to demonstrate and what we've learned, and I think that's why I like to emphasize it a lot, is that although we have these thoughts, that these continual dialogues of thoughts that come into our mind, we don't have to react to all of them. We don't have to define who we are by these thoughts, and we don't have to associate any kind of emotion to it.
Yeah.
A good example is being cut off in traffic or, you know, the streets of London. There's always going to be something dodgy or someone that causes you to almost crash.
Yeah.
And in those moments, you might want to shout a cuss word or get angry. And, you know, there was a time where when someone cut me off, you know, I'd want to race around in front of them, and, you know, just this fury that boils inside. But using these mindfulness techniques, what it will allow you to do is that as this thought, whether it's an angry thought or sad thought or a depressive thought, you're able to say, hold on, this is just a thought. Yeah. And because it's just a thought, I know this exercise that I can do. I take a breath. And as I breathe in, that thought goes away. And now I'm focusing on the present moment, on the breath. Pretty soon another thought's going to come in. But that little bombshell, full of rage and anger, has now passed.
Yeah.
And I can continue then by driving or, you know, my part of life, and get over that little episode very quickly.
Yep.
Now, not having that skill, you know, someone could live with that anger for the rest of the day.
Let it continue. Let a small incident
mm-hmm.
ruin whatever it is that they were doing.
Yep.
Allowing that boiling through, or something less, say, momentary, like someone cutting you off, and it's something more long term would keep people up at night.
Yeah.
Certainly, we can all relate to that, where we have something that has bothered us, and instead of acknowledging it's a thought, what you try to do is you get lost in the story, and you're just spending your whole night going through repeating the stories, not even aware. You know, to you, it's just. Yeah, I mean, I'd go so far as to say you're not even aware that you're thinking about anything, and yet you are.
Mm.
You're staying up at night, and you're not saying, hold up, I've spent the last 2 hours obsessing about this, you know, work incident or this comment that someone made that has pissed me off, and I've just spent the last 2 hours doing it. I've probably done. You know, spent many hours on, you know, whatever it is, you know, an interview or something that's bothered me, and I'm just lost, or certainly prior to actually formally meditating and stuff, I wouldn't even be aware. I'd just get into the story, and someone said, "What have you been doing?" My answer would have been, "I was just lying in bed." But actually, no, I haven't. I've gone through a massive series of dialogues and chat and counter that all by myself, and I'm not a madman, I'm just me. But when if someone were to ask, I wouldn't even tell them that actually I've been spending the last 2 hours thinking about stuff. I'd just be like, oh, I'm just doing nothing. But actually, I haven't been doing nothing, I've been doing quite a lot.
Well, you say you're not a madman, but a good example that Sam Harris gives
oh yeah,
is that if you were to see a man walking down the road, and as he was going, he was talking into himself. Maybe walking,
but it could be out loud.
Yeah, no, he's talking out loud.
Yeah,
right. So you see this crazy guy, and he's walking, and as we do see quite regularly, you see someone walking down the street, and if they're talking to themselves, we think that guy's nuts.
Mm.
You know, he's like laughing to himself, and he's getting angry by himself, and then he's. But we do that all the time anyway, and just because we have this filter in our brain that can just stop us from saying it. But if we didn't have that, we would be doing just as that crazy guy is doing. Yeah. We're going, oh, look at that fit girl, you know, I want to bang her. And then straight away you think of something else. Oh, you know, I like those shoes over there. Oh, I'm hungry right now. Oh, shit, I'm late. All these internal dialogues that we have all the time, but just because we're not saying them out loud, yeah, doesn't mean that it's right that we have that we're saying it constantly in our mind.
It's still there.
Because we define insanity by the guy that verbalizes it, but are we therefore not insane if we're doing it in our mind and not verbalizing it? So we say, well, what are the other benefits of meditation? Well, before we get into the other benefits, you know, well, who else is being mindful? You know, who else is adopting these mindfulness practice? So I've got a list here. let me just name off the few that I think the listeners will know. AOL, Time Warner, Apple Computers, AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Deutsche Bank, eBay, Fortis Bank, IBM, Nortel Networks, Procter & Gamble, Reebok, Starbucks, Texas Instruments, Unilever, Volvo, Xerox, Yahoo, United Healthcare, Toyota, you know, a couple of celebrities, Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, Russell Simmons, Russell Brand, Jim Carrey, you know, why are these organizations turning to it? You know, let me name off a few. Psoriasis, hair loss, you know, problems with sleeping, dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, dealing with depression,
social anxiety,
cancer, you know,
stress.
There's been research done on the effectiveness of mindfulness with cancer patients and the percentage that they can help, you know, shrink the tumours. And then when you add productivity at work, confidence, you know, if you're not depressed, then the work that you're going to do is going to be far superior. They say that the part of the brain that grows as a result of meditation leads to more creativity. You know, Tola says creativity can only happen in the present.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't happen in the past or in the future, it can only happen in the present. And then you get to the more profound levels of mindfulness. It's like, well, then, you know, it digs down to the question of the ego. You know, if I'm just this person observing all these thoughts flashing by, but then who is the person that is observing? Yeah. And within me, who is the person now asking the question? You know, who is that I? Mm. You know, these are very important questions, because if you can meditate on these issues and you can think about them, and I mean, something as profound as this deserves meditation. You know, the life, the unexamined life, is not worth living. You know, and this is a perfect example, because just like algebra, where once you get to the answer, you can check it by throwing it back into the equation. Yeah. Mindfulness, you can do it in the laboratory of your own mind, which is exactly what we're doing. You know, we're meditating about it, we're reflecting about it. And, you know, just the other day, as someone cut me off in traffic, not only was I able to breathe and go back to, and just not be in that angry mode, it actually made me happy. I lolled. Now, was it because, you know, that part of the brain has developed now where I can be more happy? Or was it that just the acknowledgement of seeing me put into practice this tool, and not only to practice, but to seeing it work? I changed a negative into a positive.
Yeah, something that made you laugh. And I think that is where the benefits are. It's actually, I mean, some find it, and there are moments where it's quite a pleasant experience, but there are times where you sort of, and again, it's more thoughts, but it's like you meditate and you think to yourself, this is gets quite boring at times, right? You know, a little bit. I mean, I actually got to a stage where it's actually quite a pleasant experience, but initially, where you're not used to it, this is it's a new thing for you. You're like, you know, you haven't really got into the flow of things. And you're battling with your own thoughts, and you're thinking, you sort of crave for the distractions. You want to get away from just sitting still, the stillness, the being present. You want to be distracted by all the gadgets.
Yeah.
But even if you don't enjoy the meditation process, which can be, some people actually do it just for sort of the euphoria. But even if that doesn't happen for you, I think the benefits come not in the meditation itself, but in the moment that you've just described. Mm-hmm. I think that is where you actually really feel the benefits. In a million, and that's just one of millions of possibilities that could go wrong in life.
I agree, but at the same time, that's the bit that we notice ourselves. But I think there's so much going on underneath and in the background whilst you meditate.
Yeah.
And those changes that are being made that we might not be able to translate into say, I can see the benefits. But at the same time, wow, everything starts to feel a bit better. And
So in the simplest way, I suppose, one of the simple benefits occurs, I would say, outside of the meditation itself. And other things like the structure, even if you don't realise it, the actual structure of the brain is changing, as you mentioned, and things like that. Or being present, right? Just the benefit of actually enjoying your life in the now, rather than looking forward to one day fixing things. That in itself, that realization that this is the only time. That is another major benefit of that. And would you say that if you haven't actually done it, you're listening to this as sort of a conversation and it's just an idea. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of experience it to actually get what we're saying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's like sex and love.
Yeah.
It's like if someone can describe sex to you all day long,
just
as they can describe love. But until you've had sex, until you've been in love, it's completely different.
Yeah.
You know, it's night and day, the understanding. It's very different, and so the meditation. And if you're still listening and you followed us this far, then I listened to a great podcast on London Real, and I can't remember who was on it, but in a survey of the top entrepreneurs and businessmen, 80% of them, the common theme was that they meditated.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was Tim Ferriss, responsible for the 4-hour week and the 4-hour this and that. In all his interviews, he says one thing that he says was the common theme between the successful people that he spoke with was that they meditated. Mm. And when asked a London Real question that they ask at the end of their podcast is, what advice would you give to the 20-year-old you?
Yeah.
They say it all the time. And Tim Ferriss said that, my advice to the 20-year-old me would be to start meditating.
Wow!
Have you heard of Tim Ferriss?
No.
Yeah, so he's got he's top of the iTunes at the moment for, I can't remember with his downloads or this and that, but he's got a great podcast, famous for finding the quickest way to achieve success in certain things. Like he'll do rock climbing, for example, and he'll speak to the best people in rock climbing. Then he'll try and, do what people usually take months and years to do in in the shortest period of time.
Wow. And his advice to his 20-year-old self was start meditating.
Start meditating.
That says it all. So, I didn't realize that. So as a means to success.
Yeah.
As a tool.
Even. Yeah. So just to go back to my experience in the isolation chamber, the first time I went, I described the analogy as, I went in there to use Excel on a desktop, and I thought, it's great. I came out relaxed, I came out refreshed. I had a good, just when you go into Excel, you create a spreadsheet, it does what it's there for, and you think, I came out, I enjoyed it. But this time I went in there to meditate. So once I was going in there, I wasn't just going to sit there and try and relax and just let my thoughts go wild. I was deliberately going in there to complete an exercise. And what I feel that taps into is like going in there to use the internet.
Yeah.
As opposed to just going there where you just have this PC that has no internet access, you're just locked into this one program and you're using it. By meditating, you're actually accessing the internet.
Yeah.
So, interpret that as you will. But the first 20 minutes seemed very difficult, and the reoccurring thought was, when's this going to be over? I've been meditating 20 minutes every day for the past so long. How am I going to do an hour? Mm. But by the time the whole thing up, I wasn't even halfway through. I thought I was 25 minutes in, but it was already an hour. Yeah. And it got to a point where I was focusing on my breath, counting up to 10. And because I kept having all these negative thoughts about, you know, when it's going to be over, the heat and that, I looked forward to counting to 10. You know what I mean? So as soon as a negative thought came up, I thought, no, immediately bring it back to the breath. And I found solace and I found peace in that. And that became the enjoyment.
Yeah.
And so no matter what I think, no matter what that thought came in, back to the breath.
Yeah.
Almost out of a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like the way that it felt when I wasn't focusing on the breath because it was just too much. But then when I found that peace.
Yeah.
And with that peace, the time just flew by. Then all of a sudden, it's like, whoa. I have to wake up and I have to get out. And it was a very weird feeling as you emerge afresh, almost like from the womb. You know, you open. Because just try and, if you see the picture that we have on the website, but it literally is a futuristic pod.
Yeah.
You know, it's got like, and then as you open it up, the front bit opens and it's got this like futuristic, you know, like blue and green and it's, and then, so I emerged from that feeling like I'd done several hours of meditation. You know, it was a really great way to condense. They say it's similar to like a mini retreat, yeah. In that way where there's, for that 1 hour, nothing can disturb you apart from your own thoughts.
Yeah, and you can't create. I mean, that's the first. That's the only time ever for me. So I had experienced such a lack of sensory experience, if you like. You can't describe it. There's no other situation that, as you said, even lying down on however comfortable your bed is, mm-hmm. you can still feel your body. Yeah. And I would imagine if you did free fall or whatever, you zero gravity, but then you can feel your guts going up. So it's like if you're one of those fairground rides.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the same because...
You know, maybe in space...
Maybe in space, but then...
You know, when you're just floating around in gravity like that, imagine you were in a nice adaptation chamber like that and the thing, and you just bounce off the walls. Maybe there's that.
Yeah.
Maybe that could be the next level of sensory deprivation.
Yeah. But you'd have your space suit on, and you'd have to feel, you'd
yeah,
feel that.
Yeah, assuming we get rid of all that.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the same. I don't think there
no,
is...
No, you can be in zero gravity without having a space suit on.
Yeah, so you're in...
You know, you get the astronauts with no mask on, and then they're flicking their pens around.
Yeah. So possibly that's the only...
Just turn off the lights, but be in a padded room where you're really going to keep bouncing off stuff. That'd probably be the annoying thing as well. But.
Yeah. Until we can all travel to space, I think this is the the cheaper alternative.
Yeah. I've got a nice little definition here for the isolation tank. So the session usually lasts between an hour to an hour and a half. For the first 40 minutes, it is reportedly possible to experience itching in various parts of the body. Did you get that?
I did, yeah.
Yep. The last 20 minutes often end with a transition from beta or alpha brainwaves to theta, which typically occurs briefly before sleep and again at waking. In a float tank, the theta state can last indefinitely without the subject losing consciousness. Many use the extended theta state as a tool for enhanced creativity and problem solving for super learning. The more often the tank is used, the longer the theta period becomes. For relaxation, one simply floats and clears the mind. Active floating has many different techniques. One may perform meditation, mantras, self-hypnosis, utilize educational programs, blah, blah, blah. That when the body is relaxed, the mind becomes highly suggestible and any action taken during these states will enter the information into the subconscious. Okay.
One of the things I wanted to, before I forget, when you said that sense of peace.
Mm.
Now, I don't want to speak on behalf of everyone, but certainly for myself and friends that I had, so I'm sure this would extend to quite a lot of people, but sort of pleasure was the definition of happiness for us at a stage, which is quite natural. So this is not something that would be an unnatural thing that we would define either pleasure or status or something like that. But peace was never the definition of our goal. But actually, it was interesting when you said, you know, you felt peace, because I think that is such a privilege to be able to feel that. At peace of what? From your thoughts, from your mind, from your life, and the frantic world in which we live. That to have just a moment of peace, genuine peace, and when you think, okay, I'm in peace, or my country's not at war, we don't mean that, or, you know, I'm not running around frantically trying to do something, but we're still not at peace, really, are we? We're still not truly rested if our thoughts are everywhere and we're trying to solve something, trying to get somewhere, then we haven't found that peace. So I think that's a real privilege to be able to say that you found a moment of peace in
there.
Yeah, that's all we can ask for, as far as I can see.
And if you look at a lot of the philosophies through time, you know, inner peace, you know, peace comes from within.
Yeah.
Seeing it as words and being able to understand it in the mindfulness meditation perspective, you know, it makes so much sense from both perspectives. But for one, it's like how you live your life, and you can really understand the meaning behind it, because peace comes from within. You know, I've always understood it. Always said, yeah, you know, peace comes from within. You have to find it. But then when someone shows you a technique of how to achieve that, mix that in with, you know, your understanding about yourself and the ego and the thoughts being separate to who you really are. Yeah. It's a very powerful tool.
And in trying to achieve the pleasure, so you put so much energy and effort. And I think, let's just break it down to a 24-hour day. So, you know, you spend maybe 8 hours sleeping, so you've got 16 hours left. So as soon as you wake up, imagine it's a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. You're looking forward to something, maybe a date, or some sort of pleasure during the day. But then once you've had that, of course, because for most people, they have to go back to the real world, i.e. having to work. You can't just be in this constant state of bliss. You might have a wonderful day.
Mm-hmm.
But then in trying to recapture that moment of pleasure or happiness, you spend the rest of the time actually quite burdened by that pursuit. I think the pursuit itself is something that causes a lot of anguish if it's not achieved. Causes a lot of upset. So in trying to achieve that pleasure for yourself, for life, or that success, the journey itself can be unpleasant, because it's like, it's not right until I get that, it's not right. But when you all you seek is peace, and anything else is a bonus, I think, what a fantastic journey to live. Mm-hmm. Because if you can find that peace, momentary peace, it's what a simple thing to achieve. And that is the truth.
But the state that you're talking about, and that's the beauty of mindfulness, is because at any stage you can summon it. Yes. Do you know what I mean? So that instead of me thinking, I have to wait till that happens before I'm happy.
Yeah.
Like you said, that's when the journey becomes unpleasant
and
unbearable.
Exactly.
Because I can't be happy now, I have to be here before
I'm happy.
Because
you're trying to achieve. Trying to achieve isn't actually that pleasant, is it?
No.
And then how long does those pleasures last? You know, even as you're...
Fleeting.
Happiness.
Yeah.
You know, you spend all day trying to, let's say...
I go to work and then you're just thinking about the weekend or thinking about that night, what am I going to have?
Yeah.
And if you're constantly in that mind where you're projecting your happiness on the state in the future,
No, you're not here.
You're always, and then, you know, for the listeners at home, then, you know, think back to that stage where you do get home, and then even when you're eating dinner, you're thinking about the next bit, about going to bed, or thinking about watching this, or and when you're in bed, you're thinking about the next day. You know, you're perpetually thinking that you're going to be happier at a future time, or thinking about a future time. But with this mindfulness meditation, regardless of what that time is, whether you're in prison, or, you know, with me, with the recent passing of my granddad, just as these thoughts come up, and as, because they say thought is akin to suffering, you know, when you're thinking, it causes, you know, that stress that they identify with suffering. But when you're not in that thinking state, that's when that peace can be found.
And how you can summon it, and you can. And one of the things, like, when you said, say, during that, when you turned around that incident from something that would have, in the past, caused you to be angry.
To blow up.
And, you know, nicked
it in the bud.
Nicked it in the bud, and then turned it around and actually made it. And I suppose because you pulled off, like that special move. You know, like that special trick, that skill in football, or a move in a computer game where you manage to master a skill. You notice that, wow, I've achieved it, and so you turned it around and made it something that caused you to laugh out loud. And
the laughing out loud just affirms it even more.
Affirms.
Do you know what I mean? So that it's just like they call it the self-fulfilling prophecy. By you living it and practicing it and seeing it work, it just strengthens your belief in it, and it strengthens and it reaffirms and it almost rewards you for the work that you're putting in. And it's just like one positive response builds up on another positive thing, and it just.
As I navigate my way to work through London traffic, one of the moments when I summon it up is in a red light. So I'm at a red light, nothing I could do. And often it's, when's it going to turn green? And I'm looking around, and I can see the other driver's agitated because it's a red light. But I actually summon, I always, this is like a frequent practice of mine now, that there is that, the longer the light, the longer the meditation.
But is it an open eye meditation or?
No, I actually sometimes, which is not good, but then you can hear the sound of the engines around you, so because I'm on the scooter, I'm actually at the front. So I actually close my eyes doing it. I wouldn't keep it closed that long because you have to be wary of the traffic around you. So I'm not actually quite that safe. But it's just a split moment where you just using that opportunity, and actually you wish that the red light would last longer. So I've actually turned that around. And it's like, so each red light is a welcome break now, as opposed to I've changed my relationship with red light. It's no longer this.
So let's say with meditation, that's a skill you develop. The ability to start turning those negative, the way you think, you know, a negative situation, and thinking positively. That in itself becomes a skill, and you're able to develop those skills through that meditation because it strengthens that part of the brain that allows you to do it. Like I said, even washing the dishes now, it doesn't matter how many dishes there are. I just go throw on a podcast and then all of a sudden I'm away. And at the end, you know, wiping down extra the table and giving every, because you're just in that podcast, so you don't mind how long it's going on for.
It's just, and I was thinking about, even if, say, for example, you don't physically show signs of stress, you know, being young, if you look healthy, people meet you, you can hold a normal conversation, and everything appears to be well. But that's on the surface. I think prior to this, not that we were, I suppose, entirely miserable. We weren't exactly miserable, but I think we felt, well, I certainly, so I don't want to talk on behalf of anyone, but I certainly felt that there was something lacking. And although still now, it doesn't mean that I'm completely, it's not the panacea where, you know, all problems are resolved and I'm just floating on this cloud of bliss. I think that would be overselling what we have. I think, but I think it's just a tool that would be sort of not not doing it justice.
Yeah, no.
You're not doing it justice because it is a way of being now. It's part of who you are. But it's difficult to find the words to describe this sense of peace that you find in moments where you know you wouldn't have otherwise had, you know. Yeah. So it's
like just being in gear all the time.
In gear.
And then the meditation, you know, you can put it into neutral.
Oh.
You know, you just give your brain that respite that it needs.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, you know, just to take a break.
Yeah, and only now looking back, you sort of realise how many unnecessary journeys that you've had with your own mind that you could have done without.
Yeah.
Had, if only you were aware of this tool, how many times people cut me off in the past that I allowed myself to just lose it.
Spoil your day or something.
Spoil your day. Or how many little comments or even when you get a phone call or an email and you think, oh, you always automatically think the worst, don't you? Yeah. And I think that's a natural reaction. You know, anything is like, it's alarming. Oh, yeah. What could it be? Just the other day, someone knocked on my door, and I don't, normally you don't get visitors, right? So you get, not unannounced anyway. So the doorbell rings and this was direct. This wasn't through the intercom. It was someone on my floor, and it was just a guy. Well, in the end, it turned out to be just a guy who needed me to sign for a parcel from one of my neighbours. Mm. It's like, who's that?
Mm.
What do they want? Like, and I'm not a paranoid guy. It's just I went out and opened the door. But now I was very calm. But I think in the past, when the door goes, you know, when the doorbell rings,
it's never usually good news. It's either Bob or some or
yeah, something. But it's like, no, it's just a sign of parcel. There's nothing to it. And there's so many sort of examples we can all give, and I'm sure we can all think of it, times where we sort of filled in the gaps. Mm. We misread a situation. We often do. We often misread without realizing it. We usually think
negatively as well.
Usually negatively. Yeah. Think the worst, and actually it's okay. No.
Yeah. And I think that's a good note to end on. You're not tied to your thoughts. When a thought comes up, you can step back, analyze it, and then through the breathing, you know, just watch it disappear.
Yeah.
And if you're able to do that, and if you're practicing that, then there's tons of other benefits that come with it. You know, like we said, you'll start seeing the benefits way before you master it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the beauties of it. But it's something that we feel that should be the natural state of mind anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe not always being in the present, but at least being aware that we don't have to react and align ourselves with every thought that just pops into our mind, because that would be insane, because we always get these random ones that keep going in and out. And going to an isolation chamber where you have no choice but to be alone with your thoughts, it's a good environment for you to kind of, you know, put this into practice. You know, and if you don't believe what we're saying and you think that you do have control of your thoughts, you know, just go back to the exercise of the, you know, focusing on your breath. You know, if you haven't done it yet, when you get some time, or even if there's a time where there's something upsetting that happens and you want to give something a go, just try and focus on your breath. And, you know, don't be surprised if your mind wanders, but it is supposed to. What we want you to do is just be aware of the thought that wanders and think back on the breath again. It sounds so simple, and it's almost funny how simple it is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, after having meditated for 4 months, I know that is a very hard thing to do. But I do feel the brain getting a bit stronger.
Mm.
I do feel that, you know, the meditations are becoming easier and they're now enjoyable. And just before we go, we want to direct our listeners to a website, actionforhappiness.org. It's an organization that you may have heard us speak about quite recently. You know, they are what their name says they are. They're an organization that studies happiness. You know, it's an organization at the forefront of trying to make countries determine its wealth not only economically by how happy its population is. One of our recent podcasts was with its director, Mark Williamson. You know, that's a good podcast for you guys to go back and just find out a bit more about this group. And we'll be explaining a bit more about their upcoming events. They've got the Dalai Lama coming in September. And next month, they got Mathieu Ricard. You know, and for us, he's one of our gurus as far as happiness and this mindfulness journey is. There will be a donation button that we post up on this page. It doesn't go to us, it goes directly to their website. If you've enjoyed our content and you like what you hear and you found it helpful, then why not give these guys a helping hand and show your support with a donation. It was actually one of their events that got me on this mindfulness journey, so we're indebted to them.
Well worth checking out.
Alright guys, peace.
Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies on a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youths, cause it's not like the future depends on it. We'll save the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee them a make big money. This is how the media pillages, on TV the picture is savages and villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids, stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a khaki pants and all of a sudden you are say a Indiana Jones, and I tip out the gold and tip out the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and I ever known, put the words on this place that the world can see, and that's all that will ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like it'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them still can't defeat and them coulda never clone. A spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord. We born knowing all. We growing wiser. Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat. If you went too far, you would fall off. Now the earth is round. If the shape changed again, everybody would have started off. The average man can't prove up most of the things that he chooses to speak of, and still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Scholars teach in universities and claim that they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose start running. And the rich get stitched up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with the wet mud. Can they resize? Can they restart?